The Disciplined Investor is underwritten by Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers charges USD margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.59%, of course, with rates subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The meme rush continues this week as Dogecoin goes to the moon and back already. Economic conditions gaining momentum. Oddly, bond yields are backing up, and our guest today, Dominic Wells, founder and CEO of OnFolio. All this and much more on episode number 710 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. What a rush. What a ride. So much money is flowing into every part of the markets. It's amazing to see that we are having an incredible amount of opportunity in so many different areas. Obviously, a lot of people are asking the question, how long is this going to hold? Can it just continue into the future where we see every single day that the markets are down, just popping right back up? And we're seeing that things like NFTs and these stocks that have high short interest and no earnings moving up. And we're seeing the things like, well, the coin side, the cryptos are just going just absolutely bonkers. How long can this last? Well, let me welcome you to this week's episode. Thank you for joining me. I'm Andrew Horowitz. I am the founder of investment management firm, financial planning firm, Horowitz & Company. So glad that you can join me this week and every single week, because there's a lot to talk about and it is really interesting on what's happening and what's going on out there, isn't it? I had a discussion this week, just not even this week, it was this weekend, with a good friend, and he's in the home remodeling business and he's having a problem. It's a good problem, but a problem, because business is so good that he just can't get it done. I mean, he has so much business that he can't keep up. And the problem is twofold. First, it's getting the product. And while he'll get it, but the question is, how long is it going to take? So you talk to somebody and they want to buy something, like, well, yeah, we can get that, but it's going to be 4 or 5 months for that particular item for your house, whether it's a cabinet, whether it's some windows. And the second problem, and maybe even more important right now, is the ability to get installers, contractors, people to do the work to actually get this done. Again, a good problem to have. There's no question about that. We know business is booming in the area of housing, and there's a 4 to 5, 6 month wait to get anything done. I just had some storm, the sliders. I replaced French doors in my house along the back of my house. And I put sliders in. It took 4 months to get that in. Once it came in, fortunately, I know the guy that does the installation, and he was able to get it in with a couple of weeks. But they're telling me that they are backed up as well. And you have to ask yourself, if it takes all this time to get the product and get the projects completed, and if, in fact, you can actually get the people to do the job, what does that mean? What does this kind of situation bring? Well, it brings prices up. Right? You have to pay more for the product as a simple supply-demand calculation. And you have to pay more for people and workers because you need them to get this done and they know it and they're expecting to get paid more. Yeah, again, it's a good problem for certain areas, for workers that are in that industry. But this also yields to inflation and inflationary pressures that we're seeing in many different industries. We saw the latest reading on PPI and CPI from wholesale goods to the finished product that goes to the consumer. And we saw that not only on a year-over-year, which we talked about, the base effect that's going to, in fact, yeah, pop all these numbers pretty hard. But we saw the month-over-month numbers get really hot again. And while we're being told that this is temporary, just a transitory situation, I really question whether or not it is. Have you seen some of the prices lately? Particularly in the area of commodities, lumber prices are just, when I say off the chart, you know, off the chart. 1 month price change on the futures from 854 to 1260. That's about a 50% increase in 30 days. 80% increase this year. 137% over 6 months. And 320% over the last 5 years. So this situation, while we just saw the expansion and movement really get parabolic over the last 6 months or so, this has been building for a while. Well, why is that? Well, we know this incredible group of our society, the millennials, that generation is finally able to move out and move in. Move out of the basement, move out of the parents' house, into a house of their own, and this high demand. And the pandemic, well, that just supercharged all of this for so many different reasons. And single-family homes, there's like a 5-year backlog right now that was reported last week of getting all the loans that would, all the houses, which need loans, I guess, out and built for those that want that. That's pretty incredible. So there's more, though. It's not just lumber, copper prices, other input prices for just finished goods. It's going up and up. The list goes on and on and on. Yeah, there's areas in the economy that there's softness in terms of pricing, but generally speaking, prices are going up. And you think it's important this time right now really to stop for a second and consider all that we are seeing and reconsider the idea that inflation may be just temporary. This concept that we have and the narrative that we're being told that inflation is simply a quick move up and it's going to move back down. I don't know if there's such a backlog of products out there and we see this massive stimulus that's come in the markets. Makes me think that maybe these price escalations could become a greater problem long term, and that we don't necessarily are in an environment that it's just going to be a 2 or 3 month kind of problem. And that is going to bring a further question to mind. Will, in fact, the Fed have to react and do something much sooner than the Fed parade of speakers has been really talking about? You know, you've heard the phrase, he who protests too much. Well, they're doing a lot of protesting lately. They want you to believe that, yeah, there's no way that they're going to change what they're doing. And we talk about this a lot because there's a great impact on markets from what they say and what they do. But right now, there seems to be a bit of a misalignment. The concept of, hey, we are seeing that there is inflation. We talked about this the last show, and we talked about this on DH Unplugged this week. I talked about this a bit on the Meb Faber show. I was a guest on that this week. I talked about that on Benzinga's pre-market. I was a guest on that this week. The idea that, hey, you know what? Maybe there is something more about this price escalation and this idea that the Fed is going to hold out to 2023 on their rates and their bond purchases are going to last pretty much forever at $120 billion per month. I'm not sure, because what we have right now are all the ingredients to really supercharge inflation, because beyond the fact that we just have these prices kind of escalating due to various circumstances, you have the psychological impact that goes on with the velocity of money, where their belief is that prices are going to go up forever. And when you have that situation, people start doing what? Saying, I better buy that right now. That's what's happening with housing in many areas. I heard of another story this week. There was a house, I believe it was in Maryland, that my friend has a friend, and he said, you know what happened? The house went up for $250. There was 88 bids. It sold for $450 within days, all cash bids coming in. Now, maybe there was something very special about this price of this house or the house. Maybe it was mispriced. I'm not sure what was happening. But in the end, what happened was we're seeing that people are rushing to get in. We've seen this in asset prices. We've seen this in home prices. We're seeing it in goods, in commodities. And this is all the baseline aspects and attributes of what happens when you get runaway inflation. We're seeing this in cryptos. Probably now, more than ever, is a really good time to just stop for a second and start thinking about looking through and carefully looking at where you have inflation-protected assets within your portfolio. Getting in some of that inflation protection. Now, traditionally, what would that be? Well, it would be real estate, for example, stocks, for another example, to a degree. You have the old commodities and gold and silver, and to a point, cryptos, if you want to believe in that, which is something you can, if you think that that's going to be benefiting from an inflationary environment. Then you have treasury inflation-protected securities. I've talked about that. TIPS. You have some alternative assets that really have no correlation to any of this that are probably something. These are the kinds of things when we develop a portfolio for our clients right now, especially, we are looking at this as a core baseline of building the portfolio. Is inflation going to come down? Is it going to go away? And if it does, what does that mean? Okay, let's build a portfolio, but then let's start stacking in there inflation-protected assets or assets that have the chance to do well in an inflationary condition. Now, runaway inflation becomes a problem for everything. I mean, if we have inflation that's running at, 5, 8, 10% a year, that's a problem. Because now the value of our dollar goes down substantially. That's why you want to be maybe in alternative currencies, possibly, like some people like the cryptos, or maybe even assets outside the U.S. That's kind of an interesting play, maybe emerging markets. That's why a lot of people, and we talked about this on the Meb Faber show, how EM is one of his favorite places to be investing right now. And a lot of it has to do with valuations, but there's something to be said about hyperinflation and where are the areas that you get the best bang for your buck in those kind of global conditions. And I think that is something really smart. I know that right now it's like, hey, you know what? I'm not touching anything because, wow, it's been great. Okay, that's fine. What better time to start thinking about how to slowly but surely add in some kind of inflation-protecting factors to a portfolio? Doesn't that make sense? Because if you're too late, well, you're too late. This kind of happens upon us. It's a condition that boils up all around us. We don't really feel it or sense it until we look back and realize, wow, ooh, that was a big difference. Here we are. Snuck up on us, It just kind of got there and started moving to a point that you think, well, I should have really done something beforehand. This is not a time to be late. I'm not suggesting you sell out. That's not it. I'm talking about rotating. I'm talking about rebalancing. I'm talking about adding in. Just repositioning to a point that gives you the opportunity that you have some layer inside of the portfolio that has inflation protected. Again, that's what we're doing on a regular basis. Not thinking that, okay, we're so worried that tomorrow we're going to see the inflation to a point that the Fed's going to have to hike rates by 3% in the next 3 months. That's not happening. We know that's not happening. They've told us 100 times and they won't do it. Even if inflation starts really picking up significantly, they're not going to do it because they know that's going to hurt other areas. However, there's nothing like the present to do some planning. So please do so. With regard to the action this week when it comes to the area of meme coins, I was pretty fascinated with the action this week. I'm sure you were as well. I mean, some of these meme coins, particularly Dogecoin, Doge, or Dogecoin, or whatever you want to call it, I still think the original founders of this were probably going to call it Dogecoin, but whatever you want to call it, massively moving this week. Elon Musk tweets a picture of a dog barking at the moon and talking about, you know, to the moon, that whole idea of to the moon. And being pushed by Mark Cuban, this thing went up, I don't know, hundreds of percent for the week, came all the way back about 50% of the weekend already. But these two are really stoking some fire with a lot of different names. They did the same thing along with Chamath the Spark, SPAC, what do I call him? Chamath the SPAC Barker is what I call him. For the SPACs, right? Remember what happened there? And we see what's happening there now. I mean, with big rush and a flush. This is something I find very troubling right now. And I do find that probably the SEC is going to catch up to them. I mean, the play that they're making, because they are rich folk that are trying to just push stuff, not really disclose what they have, not really disclose what the purpose is of what they're doing, except for just, you know, moving it up and giving you some anecdotal discussion like Cuban about, well, they're taking payment in Dogecoin and they sold, you know, some small amount of something in Dogecoin, but they're never selling it. And trying to really push this whole thing to a level is really troubling. The cheerleading that goes on from the Fed, the cheerleading from the Barkers, something really is going to break here. Mark my word. I'm telling you, something's going to break. And it doesn't have to be in the crypto area, but it could be in the markets. It could be in the, like, the SPACs broke. We see the meme stocks broke. It's going to happen here. So please try to be careful when you get caught up in this, because it's very easy to get caught up when you could just pick up your phone, open an app, and push a button. Moving on to economics. If you've been watching, the economic reports over the last few weeks have been really good and starting to show a significant momentum as a result of what? The low rates, the stimulus, back to work, reopening, vaccines, the virus slowing down in certain areas, kind of that whole grouping of everything getting back to normal. I had my second vaccine last week. I had a fever for a couple of days and wasn't feeling really great, but okay. It's over right now, hopefully over right now. And this momentum that we're seeing and this incredible opportunity, you would have thought that with the inflation numbers that we saw, with the momentum on the regional manufacturing numbers, the commentary from some of the Fed, I mean, you would have thought that you would have seen bond yields continuing higher. They were topping out at about 1.75%, kicked back a little bit last week, and really fell down to the 1.5 range this week, which is pretty amazing when you have an initial claim report sub 600,000 for the first time since the start of the pandemic. So what's going on? Well, I think it's a result of a few things. I think that we had the mechanical reasoning that we've talked about, you know, that gigantic rebalancing that's continuing from balanced and other mutual funds, as well as pension funds, sovereign wealth funds that have an edict to keep a certain balance within the portfolio of bonds to stocks. And there were some significant reports that Japan and China were buying bonds as they saw a really good spread between the bond yields that they have in their country and ours, making it very appetizing to pick up those bonds. So there's a kind of a little bit of a natural overhead resistance on this in terms of the potential for where bond yields can go. Now, if they break, that's another whole problem, but you do have some countries sticking to certain yields and yield, what do they call it now? They call it yield monitoring, if you will, where they're not going to let the yields go any higher than a certain amount. But I think that what happened with the drop in rates. It provided kind of a knee-jerk reaction to markets to say, okay, well, good news. Bond yields aren't going up again. In fact, they're turning around, turning the corner, and therefore all safe to start buying up once again the technology shares and those high PE names. The momentum names and equity markets acted like we're just going back down to a trend lower for bond yields again. But I think that is wishful thinking. I do. I think really, really wishful thinking. And it wouldn't surprise me to see another attempt to try to push up rates once again, you know, once the rebalance programs are completed and some of the sovereign buying slows down. So I'd like you to make sure to keep a watch on the tech names, especially into the earnings over the next couple of weeks, where we're going to see these names really start to come in pretty hard in terms of earnings and how the expectations are aligned, not only with the results, but the future and the outlook. So keep a watch on that, especially during earnings season. Now, I want to get to our guest, because I want to learn about some of this opportunities in buying online businesses. But let me take a moment to talk to directly to the financial advisors today and ask you if you're looking to add or switch custodians. Maybe you're going independent. I want to let you know that Interactive Brokers provides lowest cost trading and turnkey custody solutions for essentially all size firms. Because you could trade globally from a single integrated master account with no ticket charges, no custody fees, no minimums, and no tech platform or reporting fees. Plus, IBKR, or Interactive Brokers, depending on how you want to look at it, has no advisory team or prop trading desk to compete with you for your clients. And that's kind of important. So I want you to consider switching to the custody solutions that work for you at ibkr.com/RIA. And you know, we use Interactive Brokers and their platforms for our strategies. We have others we use as well. But I got to tell you, if you are trading and you are looking for a low-cost provider and really superb technology and customer support, go over to ibkr.com/RIA. And our guest today is Dominic Wells, founder and CEO of OnFolio. And Dom has a pretty great background. He's an industry thought leader, international speaker, and expert in buying and growing online businesses. And the reason why we want to have him on was because we've been getting some great feedback from listeners on all the alternative, outside, non-standard, out-of-the-box investment ideas that are out there. Because a lot of people are thinking, hey, you know what? We know the stocks, we know this bonds, we know this crypto and all that. Well, what else is there? So I thought we'd talk about some of the other things that are out there. Dominic, all the way from Taiwan, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, thanks.
Hey, thanks.
Excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. So you run a company called OnFolio. And kind of why don't you give me a quick breakdown of, you know, what is OnFolio? What are you doing? What are you up to? Kind of what's the basic principle? Because I have some interesting questions, I think, to follow up on.
Yeah, sure. The basic principle is we're a holding company and we buy and grow online businesses. We started out a couple of years ago essentially offering services to people where maybe somebody wanted to buy a business, but they didn't know how to find a good one, how to make sure it all checks out, do all the due diligence, and then how to operate it after the fact. And so we did that. But then we realized quite quickly that there's a better way to do it, so that instead of lots of individuals owning individual businesses, we could just pull everything together in the holding company, turn a more active investment into a more passive investment, and have everybody sharing the same pie. And so that way it takes out a lot of the risk that is inherent in online business, but still enables us to give people decent returns. That's what we've been focusing on.
So explain to me, I always tell people, you know, tell pretend I'm dumb and don't know anything. What's an online business? Like, what are you looking for?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's lots of different types. We tend to focus in a few areas. So the majority of the businesses we buy are what a lot of people call content businesses, which are basically kind of like publishing businesses back in the day. So a content business might be a website that offers information or maybe some info products or a paid membership. So, for example, one of our biggest websites is quite a boring topic. It's just all about keeping pet fish. And so people go into Google, they search something like, why is my fish's fin white, or how do I breed my goldfish, that kind of thing.
Or why is my fish laying at the bottom of the tank, right?
hopefully they're searching before that. But yeah, and then we've got pages and pages of information, and we sell ebooks, and we have digital advertising on the website, and this website gets something like over 1 million visitors a month.
Wow.
So it's, really boring topic, but very—
Well, it's not a boring topic business. For people. Well, for people with pets, it's an exciting topic. You know what I mean? I'm not sure that I'm going to look up, what's the best bunny rabbit to have in a house, but, there's a lot of people that want to do something like that, right? I mean, that's a part of the world.
Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, I've had pet fish as well, so it's not boring for me, but I guess I meant it's not a sexy business compared to some of the other things that a lot of people are doing. And then other types of businesses. So we have an e-commerce business, which is where rather than selling information and publishing content as the main thing, we just sell physical products. And so there's so many different types. You can sell supplements, you can sell machines, you can sell clothes, anything that people want to buy.
Let me ask you something. Do you ever have a tie-in where, for example, let's go back to your pet information site where, for example, maybe you'll have dog nutrition as an example. And then you have a tie-in with another part of another company that you have that maybe has dog nutrition, so you can kind of cross-sell?
Yeah, and that's... actually, with the fish site, that's one thing we're working on now. And we do have a dog site as well, where we're looking at getting some dog supplements manufactured as well. And there's actually companies out there who they work with retailers, so they already have all the formulas and everything, and you just you can white label their products or something like that.
Right.
And that's another advantage of when we realized we could turn into a holding company. We realized, well, we can make all of our business related now, rather than investor A wants to own a dog site and investor B wants to own dog supplements. Everybody owns the same thing now, right? So we can do all those cool things.
So they kind of feed off each other. I mean, like, for example, if I have a fighting beta, I can maybe this, like, some, I don't know, e-commerce site that you own also, that you may look at eventually, that makes fighting beta t-shirts or something. I'm kind of getting a little crazy here. But I mean, the point is, what you're looking to do is to gain traction, maybe from the e-commerce and then from the information source. That's kind of a cool— I like that, because, obviously the more you can leverage some of this stuff, the more the opportunities are for income. Now, over the years, there's a lot of things that have changed online, right? You know, we've had from way back when, the social media from MySpace to Facebook, big change in that whole realm of things, right? We had AOL that is, been obviously still around, but that was the thing. And now it's kind of like all separate sites. Although my father-in-law still thinks AOL is his computer. Like, if something goes wrong with his computer, he calls AOL, but that's another story. What has changed over the years when it comes to, like, the acquisitions and what you're looking for over the year, over the past number of years?
Yeah. I think there's been some very good changes. I think there's a lot more quality online businesses being built, and a lot of sellers are understanding that these are actually things that they can sell to somebody else. So that means there's a lot of, there's a lot more opportunities for acquisition. But then the negatives are it's a lot harder. Google's ranking algorithm is a lot more volatile these days. So you might buy a website that gets the majority of its traffic from Google search, and it's a quality website, but then Google changes its algorithm to try and just improve its search results, or try and get people to buy more ads instead. And suddenly that website loses a significant amount of its traffic. I think that's probably the hardest risk. And so that's why we think, well, if we've got all this traffic, let's see if we can build a real brand around it and funnel that traffic into, like you said, like a Betafish t-shirt store, where now people are fans of the brand. So even if you lose some of your search traffic, people are going to come back over and over again. And then I think since the start of the pandemic, there's been a massive increase in online shopping. People always relied on Amazon, and that hasn't really changed. But I think standalone e-commerce stores, people are a lot more happy to hand over their credit cards, because they realize, oh, this is a real store, it's a real business, they're not going to run off with my details. And I think Shopify has helped that as well. They've made it a lot easier for anybody to start.
Anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, that Shopify, it's interesting. That started as a WordPress plugin. Did you know that? You probably knew that.
Yeah, I remember one day looking at it and it had changed, and I was like, oh, I didn't realize Shopify was this robust. But I didn't remember how it started out.
Yeah, I think it was a WordPress plugin originally. Anyway, great company now, obviously multi-billions, captured a lot of the audience out there, captured a lot of the imagination of people who wanted to have a store but couldn't put all together from the ordering to fulfillment to the credit card to the shipping to the customer service, kind of put it all together. But like you said, it really creates some great opportunity for the person who wants to go into business. And then what you're finding is that there are these businesses out there that have, I guess, a good shot, but maybe need a little bit more push and refinement. And then you buy them, I guess. And what's happening is you're going in, if I understand what you're saying correctly, and you're going in and really working to expand this to create more of an opportunity for yourself and investors, right? For the company, for Unfolio, and for the people that are investing with you. So once you acquire the business, what do you do then?
Yeah, it really depends on what's going on. With the fish keeping one, actually, what we're seeing is a lot of people who build these businesses and then sell them, they're kind of only strong in one area. And so the guys who built the fish keeping site, they're good at building strong sites and then getting traffic to them, getting them to rank highly in Google, but then they can't really do much else. And so we, as a team and a company, we have a lot more areas that we're strong in. And so they were getting, like I said, a million page views a month, but they weren't really capturing any email subscribers, and they weren't doing any info products, just because they didn't know how, or they didn't want to. They'd rather just get the business to a certain point and then sell it. Mm-hmm. So we continue doing what they were doing, continue to grow the traffic. I think we've grown it around 30% since we took it over. And we also started getting email subscribers. So we've now got a very large email list, I think around 30 or 40,000 people. And we launched digital products to those,
right,
to
you're
those
people. You're monetizing. That's the point,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Is the whole point of taking something that maybe is small pennies to large dollars. And then what happens moving forward? Is there an exit strategy for the business and for the general portfolio? Because you have a lot of different companies inside the portfolio, right?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of operate from more of a permanent capital philosophy. So we'll sell a business if it makes sense to, maybe because we just don't want to hold it long term. But generally, we're trying to hold something long term, more like the Berkshire Hathaway model, except where we're just 100% buying businesses rather than investing into them. So really the idea is this business, we're going to keep growing it, and then just that cash goes back to the company to buy more businesses with, and just snowballed it from there.
So is there a country or a, I guess with online, it doesn't matter what country something's in or what province, right?
Yeah, for the most part, it's kind of location agnostic, but we're all English speakers. A lot of the team are American, and so we operate almost entirely in the US market. OnFolio is a US company, and it's the biggest market to capture. Most of the search traffic is in the US. So we just focus there.
So I read somewhere about, I'm not sure if I got this right, so you're going to have to help me. But I thought I read as I was doing the research on some of the things you do that there currently is a, what is it, a 10 or 12% dividend? There's some dividend that is paid on a regular basis. That's what you're looking to do in terms of an income generation back to investors. Did I get that right?
Yeah, it's a preferred share and it's a 12% dividend paid as 3% per quarter. So the general idea is when we buy these businesses, we can typically earn around 25% ourselves. And so we're effectively sharing a little bit under half of that with the shareholders. And the idea is with online business, sure, you could buy the business yourself and grow it. And maybe you could get 25, 30, 40%, but you know, you could also have it go to zero. And so we're trying to put something together where we can significantly reduce that downside risk, but still offer yield, which is well above market average. And 12% is the number that we're comfortable offering. And I think it's attractive enough that people definitely want to participate.
So why would you do a dividend if the other alternative would be for a long-term investment to plow it back into the company, looking for other places to other online businesses to buy to keep on growing this thing? I mean, I'm not sure. I don't understand why you would do the 12% or a dividend at all.
Yeah, well, we actually have common shares as well. And the plan is that we're going to list our common shares on the over-the-counter markets probably later this year and then keep growing the company and eventually uplist onto NASDAQ. So people who want that long-term growth they can buy our common shares instead when they're available. But when we first started raising and speaking to investors, there were a lot of people who said, I don't really want to hold long-term and know that my only gain comes when I sell the shares. I'd rather have cash flow. And we thought, well, let's put kind of two options on the table. So if someone wants us to, they just want to buy the shares when they're say $1 and hold them for a few years. And as they grow, maybe the shares appreciate in price. People can have that. And then if other people just want cash flow and they're not as interested in the sort of share price appreciation and they just want regular dividend, then they can take the preferred shares. And for the company, both of them can benefit the company in different ways, and so it's just a kind of cost of capital.
So this is the preferred shares are direct listing. Is that right?
Both of them will be a direct listing. Preferred shares, once we've sold $15 million worth, we'll list them, and the common shares we'll just list as soon as we're kind of ready and the SEC have approved.
So this is kind of I don't want to say that word IPO because you're direct listing, but this is pre-publicly traded positioning in a private company right now that is owned by the investors. I don't know if I got that right. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, in October last year, we sold a percentage of the company to investors who own common shares. And then from December onwards, we started offering the preferred shares. And the plan is probably Q3 this year, we will do the direct listing. And then once enough preferred shares have been sold, they'll also be listed.
Mm. So what are you seeing with valuations right now with the idea that we're seeing, you know, Coinbase coming out with this $65 to $100 billion valuation, and you're seeing that companies through SPACs, through other means, and even put that all aside, the general markets, which don't seem to ever want to go down, the valuations, you know, was talking about 23 times multiples, and the private equity market also seeing some astounding numbers, not to mention things like even used cars and lumber prices and housing. So what are you seeing in terms of the valuations that have maybe changed over the last number of months, or last few years, in terms of the online businesses?
Yeah, pretty much similar things to the rest of the world and different asset classes. It's been a gradual increase over the last decade or so, and then the last 6 months it seems to have accelerated. Yeah, which is it's disappointing as a buyer,
but right.
It'll just play into our valuation as a public company as well. So it kind of, we benefit from it as well.
So the sectors that you're targeting. So we talked about e-commerce and we talked about some of the information driven sites. What, you know, kind of reaching out if you had a wish list, right? You know, like, all right, we're not talking about exactly valuations right now, but if you had a wish list, what businesses would you actually go out and say, hey, I want to buy these kind of businesses right now?
I'm a big fan actually of the kind of modern media company. So companies like Morning Brew, I know they actually were recently acquired, but something like Morning Brew, where they just put out really good content and kind of makes you laugh a bit. It's not just dry content, and they sell sponsorships, and their readers just receive an email every day, and they look forward to it. I'm kind of assuming everyone listening knows what Morning Brew does, but for those who don't, essentially they're just a newsletter. They send a daily email with a kind of recap of the markets or just business news.
I find it interesting that an Englishman likes information and news that has humor in it and is not dry. quite the opposite of we get in the mainland, don't you think, of England?
I don't know. We like dry humor, sure, but I'm also a father, so I like dad jokes.
Oh boy.
Kind of like,
yeah, I get it. We go on for hours with that. Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah. But it's kind of what it represents. I think people are losing interest in getting their news from the sort of traditional media. Definitely as the traditional media is it's either very left wing or very right wing. It's hard to just find entertaining media that isn't polarizing. And so I think I think in the future there'll be publications like Morning Brew that don't just focus on the news. There'll be one in every industry where people just say, I want to learn about chess. Maybe I'm going to go learn from this modern chess company or something like that. And so I think that is also a very defensible type of business to own. And there's endless ways to grow them. I mean, you can see what Morning Brew are doing. They've now got Marketing Brew, and they've got, I think, Tech Brew. So it's very easy for them to move horizontally.
That brings up another industry that's very similar. Well, not similar, but it has, right now it seems that there is a saturation point, and it seems like maybe it's a little bit different. But, the podcasting industry, as an example, has seen an incredible explosion. Everybody is a directory. Everybody wants to be, I don't know, Spotify wants to be Apple. They're failing at it miserably, right? That industry, the whole information has blossomed incredibly over the years. So I think you're right, because podcasting oftentimes, not always, but will blend in some lighter humor, personal stories. When you have a host that can be relatable versus just the news, and if that news is in fact slanted with some kind of bias, I could see where that's off-putting.
Yeah, and I think podcasting is a good example of a content business as well. It doesn't just have to be written content. I actually think if you spend 30 minutes in someone's ears every day, then they're going to just naturally just have a lot more just positivity towards you. And if you decided, hey, we're going to...
It's a relationship. Yeah, it becomes a relationship. I totally agree with that. I've been doing this for a long time. And yeah. Sometimes I, you know, listeners call me and we talk and they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm talking to you because I hear you all the time every week for an hour in my ears. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if it's good or bad sometimes, but it's definitely because it creates a relationship. And that's what people are looking for more than just being talked to, talked at, right?
Yeah. And I think it's, there's so many reasons. I think on a conscious level, it's just nicer to be talked to rather than talked at. But I think also people are overwhelmed. So when you find something like Morning Brew or you find a podcast that you can relate to, it's kind of relieving because you kind of think, oh, I can drown out some of the other noise and just listen to this. And of course, yeah, no one wants to just listen to one person or read one information source, but it is nice. Like, okay, I don't have to read 15 different websites now. I can just listen to this one podcast or read this one newsletter.
Right.
It's like the only way to survive. And so I think being able to create more and more content like that is just going to, I can't really think of any downside other than it's hard. And then that just comes with its own upsides anyway.
So let's flip it on another track. And you have your OnFolio, you know, buyer's hat on looking for companies. What are you staying away from?
In content sites, I kind of want to stay away from something that is too easily copyable. I guess it's kind of standard, but
low barrier to entry.
Just a generic. Maybe it relies too heavily on, say, on Google traffic. It has nothing else remarkable about it. Also, sometimes there's certain types of content that isn't evergreen. So for example, the fish one, we write a guide to goldfish. We don't need to update that every week because goldfish typically
they don't change.
The same. Whereas some tech publications, you know, let's say you're reviewing laptops, you're going to write an article and then 6 months later it's out of date. Now, that's also an opportunity, though, because people are going to keep coming back to you to read the latest information. So there are pros and cons, but it can be hard to make that work. And that's why I like these sort of
businesses I would say that
boring.
The best laptops under $500 is one headline I'm seeing. And the other headline I'm seeing is the shocking truth about goldfish. You know what I mean? That kind of, it has to be updated. So you are taking outside investors. Who's right and wrong for this investment? And is there a minimum? What's the story with that?
Yeah. So right now, because it's just a private raise, people need to be accredited. So that's obviously going to disqualify a lot of people right away. But assuming someone's accredited, the ideal investor for the preferred shares, which is the 12% dividend paying one, would be someone who wants a stable dividend and probably a long-term income investor. So maybe somebody who wants to put in 25K or 100K or more and just receive a regular dividend. Whereas the common shares is more for speculation because you're assuming that the share price is going to increase over a certain period of time.
Is the preferred available in IRAs?
Yes, it is. Yeah,
that's important because people, you know, who on one hand, dividends are taxed as ordinary income, and therefore IRAs sometimes are a better suit for investing in income generating, especially high income generating strategies. So if you have IRAs, I bet you that would probably. I'm assuming a lot of people probably do that with you.
Yeah, we've had a few people invest in IRAs, lots of trusts, the minimum right now is 10K, but we're going to put it up to, I think, 25. So depending when this is published, it might be 25. But we've had a lot of people who just put in the minimum, but they want to put in a lot more, but they also want to make sure that we're actually going to pay the first dividend. So we had our first dividend payment about 3 weeks ago, and a lot of people came back and said, like, it's real. How can I put more in? So that's why the minimum is kind of low right now, right, just so that people can, you know, they can test the waters.
Well, I just think it's really interesting. I mean, in terms of what you're doing in the area of looking outside and around and then pooling your talents to bring in these kinds of opportunities, because obviously, you know, you're doing a roll up is what you're doing a lot of this, right? You're kind of bringing this all together, rolling up all these different businesses that have similarities but differences and can be utilized for cross selling and then for growth. So cool stuff. How do people get in touch with you?
They can go to onfolio.co. Okay. If they want to read more about the company, or invest in onfolio.com if they want to actually look at the preferred share offering. And they can just email dom@onfolio.co if they want to reach me directly.
All right, good stuff. I appreciate you coming on. We'll get maybe a follow-up in a few months to see what's cooking, what you're buying, and, you know, see how you're saving the goldfish of the world.
Yeah, that would be great.
All right, buddy. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Always something new to learn on the Disciplined Investor podcast, right? I mean, that's why we bring the guests on, to learn kind of some of the things that, well, we may not have known about and are out there and are kind of, well, interesting and opportunities, right? So that's the whole point of each and every week, us figuring out what's going on with markets, what else is out there, looking at the alternatives, looking at the core, looking at what's happening, understanding the economics, understanding the earnings. It's all part of the process of being a disciplined investor. Thank you so much for joining me. I want to thank every single one of you. Thank you for your emails. Listen, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's an area on there that says, ask Andrew. You have a question? You have a comment, you have a concern, hit me right there. Also, if you have any thoughts on us working with your 401k rollover, your IRA, your individual account, maybe helping you on some of the things that you're doing with your finances right now, well, all the strategies are also listed at that place, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Check it all out. There's a great video on there that does a virtual walkthrough of the TDI MG Managed Growth Strategy, which is a long-short strategy, or our global allocations, or even our robo-esque, our look at utilizing both technology and marrying it to the advisor experience and having the opportunity through Investology, which is simply a great way to invest if you want to do it kind of with yourself and us helping you at the same time. So check that out over on The Disciplined Investor. Until next week, thanks so much for joining me. I'll see you then. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.